Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast for Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Ed Compion.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
And Jeff, today we're going to continue with our series, you know, on debriefing and talk about what that means. And today we're going to speak about a very specific kind of debriefing and then maybe transition into, you know, debriefing for families, you know, specifically for MK. So,
yeah. And for those of you that haven't, you know, heard any of these series yet on debriefing, let me just sort of summarize for you. When we talk about missionary debriefing, we're talking about a relational and intentional process that provides an opportunity for a missionary to tell their story by verbally processing, you know, things that have happened to them in the past or recent events, you know, from their point of view. And we want them to include their emotional responses at the time it happened and how they're feeling about it since. So basically, a debriefing is intentionally sitting down and letting a missionary verbally unpack both what they've done and what they've felt over the past few years.
Yeah, especially for a maintenance debrief, that is a debrief that may be happening on the field or maybe during a furlough time back in the States. This is a time where the majority of the heavy lifting, so to speak, is being done by the missionary. They're the ones that are doing the majority of talking, and really the debriefer is just sort of eliciting the story, sort of drawing them out. And so there's a lot of this can be done by someone with sort of pastoral gifts. Not necessarily an ordained pastor, but that person that may have the gifts, a man or a woman, that could really have a care and a compassion, a kind of a shepherd's heart towards these people to draw them out that they can be heard from.
Yeah, and I think also, the defining terms and stuff. When we've talked previously about debriefing, we've talked primarily about missionaries that are transitioning off the field and back into the U.S. And so we call that transitional debriefing.
Right.
And that actually, the goals of that are refreshing and realigning the missionary for the next phase of life that God has called them into. In this podcast, as Ed said, we're talking about what we call transitional debriefing. And that's basically the idea of doing a little less formal debriefing with somebody who's still a missionary, either while they're on the field or when they're back in the States on furlough. And because it's more informal, it doesn't require the same level of preparation, the same level of knowledge or training for somebody to debrief them. But really what a transitional debriefing does is refreshes and realigns. What a maintenance debriefing does is it confirms the missionary in their calling, and then it helps them to calibrate themselves for future effectiveness and a more healthy, both spiritual, emotional, maybe even physical healthiness for their ongoing ministry on the field.
Yeah, as much as we love to suggest tools for assessing their use of time and tools for assessing what their last season was like and what's going forward, this is more a chance for them to be reflective to see how things have went and where they believe God may be leading them. So it adds to a confirmation God has been at work, and then it adds to a calibration of maybe some adjustments that may need to happen, whether it be in the practical ministry side or whether it's in the personal walk side. They need to be more diligent about, you know, a personal walk with the Lord, more diligent about family life, more diligent about other soul care issues.
Yeah, and the missionaries need to be confirmed in their calling.
Yeah.
And so part of the maintenance debrief, that first goal, is confirming them, saying, hey, you know what? It's obvious God's got his hand on your life. He continues to provide for you. You're right where God's called you to be, and you're doing what God's called you to do. And so we want to encourage you with that. But basically, you need to also think about, how can I keep myself healthier? How can I calibrate, as you said, either my ministry, what I'm doing ministry-wise, or even more important, the things that make up my personal and emotional well-being and my family's personal and emotional well-being. And that's sort of that calibration, meaning they need to stop doing certain things or start doing certain things so that they're going to be more effective in the work that God's called them to do.
Yeah, for me, one of the greatest tools I've been able to pass on to a few missionaries as I've went and done maintenance debriefing, mm-hmm. is helping them set up sort of, you know, patterns. And I call them Sabbath patterns, meaning,
yes,
patterns in their life where, you know, they're pouring out, but also realizing they may have to draw back and for a season of Sabbath, and Lord willing, be a weekly pattern for them, but getting a bigger picture of how God works in their life, mm-hmm. and yet relaxing and resting in Him for that time.
Yeah, and that's absolutely crucial. Missionaries, are notorious and by nature workaholics. And part of the maintenance debrief, the calibration portion of that, is to get them to look at, you know, do they have these Sabbath patterns in their lives? And as strange as it is to say, you know, clearly the Lord lays out in His Word the importance of one day in seven set apart to do nothing.
Yeah.
Yet you talk to 90% of missionaries and they always have something to do almost every day. They don't intentionally set that day apart. And part of that is a whole another podcast subject. They're doing it because they think of the little old woman that's given $20 from her Social Security check, and they feel like if they take a day off, she's sacrificing so much to send that $20 that they don't want to let her down.
Yeah, that's right. I've never felt that. Have you felt that, Jeff?
No, not at all.
Oh, not us. Yes. So what does a maintenance debrief often look like, just on a practical level? What might it look like, a typical scenario?
Well, I think from my experience is you want the missionary needs to know that the one that's going to, you know, do the maintenance debrief with them is coming or is going to meet with them to intentionally do a debrief.
That's right.
It's not just a time to have coffee and get together. Yeah, you're going to have coffee. Yes, you're getting together. But the missionary needs to understand that, hey, I'm here to help you tell about your story up to this point in your life in ministry. And so there needs to be intentionality about it. And then there needs to be, hey, dude, tell me about how you got to the field, how God brought all your support together, what it's been like interacting with people back home. Tell me how this thing has unfolded since you got here. What expectations were met? What expectations weren't met? You know, if you could rewind and do it again prior to coming here, what would you do differently? You know, and those kind of things.
Yeah. What I love so much about what you said, Jeff, is we're speaking about the actual missionary. We're not very interested in their productivity.
No.
We're not very interested in how they're relating to the mission agency.
Yes.
We're not, I mean, those are important things.
Right.
You know, we're not going to ask numbers about how many churches were planted. A lot of that stuff will come out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How many hours are you spending a week doing one-on-one evangelism?
Yeah.
You know, those sort of things. We're not going to ask right. those questions, although some of it may come up. We're actually caring about the soul of the missionary.
Yes.
And the rest of that stuff is really on another level that we respect and leave to, you know, the churches, we leave to the traditional mission agencies or whatever the situation may be. We're caring about how that missionary is doing.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to immediately deflate a missionary or immediately cause them to become a hypocrite, ask mm-hmm. them, well, how many people have you led to the Lord since you got to the field?
Yeah.
I mean, then they've only got two answers. Yeah. Either they're going to be honest and be totally discouraged, or they're going to say, oh, well, I've led a bunch of people to the Lord,
yeah.
you know, and then really they're not telling the truth. So that's a really good point. You know, what we want to do is we want to let them get real with us. And we're not talking about productivity. We're talking about how they're doing. And that happens by asking them questions and letting them answer those questions as they tell their story.
And it's surprising as they go along how the Lord will use that to confirm their calling.
Yes.
And be ready to go. And it's not really up to us as the debriefers to judge that. It's
right.
really up to us to, you know, maybe help them draw it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's really up to them to, you know, explain why they know they're called.
Yes.
I mean, it's a whole other package here, maybe a whole other podcast. If it, they're starting to discover, maybe they're not.
Yes.
But we're not going there today. But the goal is there to draw them out, let them walk through it, and maybe yeah. express things that they haven't even wrestled with personally.
Yes.
That suddenly they're wrestling with something. And you're there to be the sounding board. You're there to,
yeah.
to walk them, probably not even offer a whole lot of advice as much as just hear them out and be their friend.
Yeah, and by asking strategic questions and listening to them, and they start to bare their hearts with you as things are struggling on, then you kind of transition into that calibration
yeah.
Mode. And so, yeah, you're going to confirm in their calling. But now, based on what they're saying and how they're describing themselves, you kind of say, well, you know, have you thought of this? You know, what are you doing for your soul care? Are you taking a whole day off every week? You know, and when you do, are you detaching from availability,
yeah.
in a sense, to the people that you're ministering with or your fellow teammates or whatever? You know, are you getting any, or do you have any boundaries? Kind of, that's the term that's real popular today. You know, what are your boundaries that you've established?
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes when it's a family dynamic, you know, I've made suggestions, not only for a weekly Sabbath, but hey, is there a situation where maybe quarterly or every few months, you get away for the equivalent of a weekend, you know,
yes.
for an overnight, you know, someplace,
yes.
just to, unattached from the ministry. Because it's draining. Living in a developing nation or living in any other culture that's not your own,
yes.
functioning in a foreign language, all these sort of things are extremely draining.
Yeah.
And so to take a weekend here or there,
yes.
and speak English and maybe find a place with a burger or whatever it is that feeds you.
Right.
To go do that, it's hyper valuable and it's hyper refreshing. And it allows you to be kind of move forward without that draining experience.
Yeah. And missionaries, especially if the person doing the debrief is from their home church.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, they've come with great love for the missionary, or they're visiting with the missionary while they're on furlough. Having somebody from the leadership of your home church, or somebody that really cares about you from your home church, tell you that it's okay to take time off, that you need to take time off, I can't tell you how refreshing that is. You know, I remember when we were on the field, my pastor came over a couple of times during our 5.5 years there. And you know, normally when you have visitors, when you're on the field, and I know you can relate to this, Ed, you know, you got people coming and you got to set up a schedule for them to do this and them to do that while they're there. And my pastor would come and he would say, hey, don't do anything. Don't set anything up. We're just going to come set apart a couple of days. We want to take you and Helen and the kids out to dinner and just love on you. Yeah. And it was like, oh my gosh, that was so refreshing, so stimulating, so reinvigorating, you know. And in a sense, what my pastor did to me was kind of what fed the roots of Shepherd Staff, based on my own experience being cared for by my pastor and the leaders of my home church.
I love that example, and I know your pastor. I could just see his heart in all that, so it's a fond memory. Well, let me back up and how that can happen. Mm-hmm. As the debriefer, we want to set a safe environment for that missionary.
Yes.
So they know anything they share is not going to be reported outside the walls.
Yes.
You know, outside of kind of mandatory reporting sort of things.
Right.
But that's going to be extremely rare. But when it comes down to, we want to share their heart. We want to help them to continue on.
Yes.
And we want to refresh them and allow them just that time of not only confirmation, but recalibration that they are going to go forward. And mm-hmm. that only happens in a safe zone. It doesn't happen when they feel you're taking notes, it's going to go back and be presented to the mission board.
Yeah, and you know, that's a whole nother maybe topic for another podcast, but you know, are there certain triggers that if you hear a missionary share certain things, it's like that triggers you having to go and bring somebody else into the loop? Most of the time that's not going to happen.
Right.
And so again, missionaries need to know that they can trust that you're safe. And if you establish that ahead of time, it really makes it easier for them to bear their hearts with you.
Sure. Yeah. There's some other practical things we can go over, such as how much time you need to set apart. And let me suggest the minimum you need is probably the better part of a day.
Yes.
Two days would be better, you know, in this sort of maintenance debrief. Longer may not be needed, but maybe fun if you happen to be passing through an area.
Yeah.
But that way it's not a pressured situation. In a place that's comfortable, a place where there's not interruptions, a place where the missionary has thought forward and kind of unhinged from the ministry that he or she is involved with.
Right. Yeah. So Ed, I want to transition into an area that you've just had some recent training in and you have a heart for. You know, if you've been listening to these podcasts, you're probably thinking all of what we talk about regarding debriefing, both transitional and maintenance debriefing and refreshing and realigning and confirming and calibrating. All these things are primarily for adults or maybe even single people or married people, but missionaries go to the field as families. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about, share with me, Lord, Ed, some of your thoughts about family debriefing and even debriefing missionary kids.
Yeah, you know, it's impossible to unhinge parents from their children.
Yes.
So it's a family unit very often on mm-hmm. the field. And so those children need to experience refreshing, realignment, confirmation, recalibration, all together as well.
Mm-hmm.
They need it as well. Yet, it's not done by the same methods as you do adults.
Right.
And so there needs to be some sort of, you know, calibration within the debriefer to work that out.
Yeah, so give me some examples on how debriefing children differs from debriefing adults, or kind of package that for me.
Well, a child needs to trust that adult, especially if they're not familiar with that adult. So, mm-hmm. you know, just dropping in and suddenly asking that 7-year-old or 10-year-old to share what's going on in their life and share about the challenges of moving over, share some of the griefs and such of their transitions, that's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to use what would seem like games to them mm-hmm. and engage them at that level. Before we get there, though, let's talk about this and understand. I've actually been asked a couple times recently, what is an MK? You know, it's actually about my own kids.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff.
Well, not only what is a missionary kid, but what's the big deal?
Yeah, what's the big deal?
With missionary kids, why do they get a special label?
Well, they're, you know, third culture kids, which is a broader group. You know,
yes.
these are kids that have grown up maybe in the military or grown up, you know, in embassy work and such as that, are children that have experienced a significant part of their development in a culture other than their parents' home culture.
Yes.
Okay, now the MKs, the missionary kids, are a subset of that group.
Right.
And there's, you know, things that are similar with all third culture kids, but there's things that are unique to missionary kids.
Yes.
And so these are kids that have significant influence from their passport culture, the culture of their parents. Mm-hmm. They also have significant experience from their host culture. Usually they will become more like the national culture they're in than their parents.
Yes.
By far, because they're growing up in a more influential season of their life. They will also have influence maybe from an international school or other cultural influences that are there, because often it's an international city and they may have, you know, say Koreans at their school, or they may have some Indians at their school. They may have any number of other sort of cultures mm-hmm. influencing them. And then finally, there's often a missionary culture. You know, missionaries tend to be freaks. No, I don't think so. You know, the unique yeah. things about missionaries. And also sometimes, depending on the missionary, a denominational culture.
Right.
And so there's interesting things that, you know, specifics, you know, sort of the distinctives of different denominations may have influence also. I think of a friend of mine from a particular denomination. We're both surfers and we're in Africa and we're joking about surfing. And I was joking about surfing with my daughter, and, or we're coming about surfing with my daughter. And he says, oh, you know, in my group, we never mix bathe. And, you know, we kind of giggled about it. But he comes from that culture. And I come from California culture yeah. where we're all in the same hot tub.
Yeah. So really, you're, you know, what you're saying about missionary kids is kind of like from the Shrek movies. Missionary kids are really like onions. They have many, many layers, right?
That's a great analogy. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And that's how they are. And it's hard to say anything very definitive about every missionary kid, but let me throw out a couple general observations.
Okay.
You know, they tend to be more mature socially than other children their age.
Okay, now what does that look like? What does that mean, more mature socially?
They're very often children that are very comfortable speaking with adults and having friends of different ages.
Yes.
They're also not very, you know, shocked, or they're not, there's not that moment of hesitation when they meet people from other cultures. They're instinctively people of other cultures, just make sense to them.
Right.
And so, and as we become more of a world population, globalization, they're really in the right place for this.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, culturally, as far as the American culture, they're a little behind often.
Yes.
You know, my daughter, when she came back to America, she spent, you know, her first summer watching a bunch of American movies, trying to, and all of a sudden stuff, things started to make sense to her.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sometimes in the sort of cultural things, they may be a little behind. And that's not always a bad thing, by the way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a, mm-hmm. it's a good thing. They tend to value relationships above tasks by
yes.
far.
And so, which makes them really different than American culture at large.
By far. And when you show up and say, we need to get this debrief done this afternoon, they're like, why? What's yeah. so important about this afternoon?
Yeah.
They tend to be chameleons. They're really, really adaptive wherever they're at, but they also completely seek community wherever they're at. And I'm speaking in generalities,
right.
but by their very nature, they seek community. They want to be with people, and yes. by their nature, and they want to experience life as a group. They were kind of, you know, moving in the front of our current generation of young people that's known to be very community-based. The MKs have always been community-based.
Right.
You know,
and
more
so,
than
you
millennials.
Know, to me, I think, you know, one of the things about that when you say community-based is like, you know, again, one of the American cultural virtues is independence and having your own individual identity. And what you're saying is that missionary kids are okay with having their identity be part of a larger group.
Absolutely.
They don't need to have their own individual identity right,
right.
off the bat, like most Americans do.
That's right. And I've read that a lot of the millennial generation is that way.
Yes,
you know,
I've read that too.
I'm way past that age, so I don't know that for sure. But,
yes.
From what I understand.
Yeah.
And so I think that they have some advantages there. And then I would dare say also the MKs, another kind of characteristic, is they're very equipped for what the future kingdom work will look like. And by this, I mean, they are usually, when they come off the field, these kids tend to become leaders in ministry and healthcare, education, and business mm-hmm. because they have dealt with these things on the field. Mm-hmm. They do very well. And I tell almost every missionary we interview here at Shepherd Staff, I said, the best thing you can do for your kids is raise them on the mission field.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, it's like the best investment you'll make.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I have a personal experience of that. When we're getting ready to come back from the Central Philippines, my son was 15 at the time, and I really struggled with, even though I knew it intellectually, I really struggled with the idea that, hey, has the 5.5 years we've spent in this country, has it hindered my kids from living a successful life in America? Have I actually put an obstacle in my kids' path to living life in America? And I started talking to a bunch of internationals that lived in our city, and I made this one guy who ran, he was a British guy, not a believer, that had been living there 30 years, and he ran an English company in our city, And he said, listen, Jeff, he goes, your kids are going to be better American citizens. They're going to be more mature, all the things you're talking about, because they've lived here. You haven't put an obstacle in their path. You've actually pushed them forward to a degree that very few people they're going to interact with in the States are. And now that I've been back 20 years and I look at my three kids, I just go, wow.
Yeah.
It was the best thing that could have happened to them to spend that time that they did living in another country and culture.
Absolutely. And as they were able to come back and share their stories and express what God has done, that's the goal as we're speaking about what it's like to debrief these MKs.
That's really interesting stuff. Good stuff.
Well, let me go on with this and share a little bit about how the relationship between MKs and Americans often play out. And
okay.
Again, neither one is necessarily right.
Right.
But there is some built-in tension into this situation.
Okay.
It's almost weird, as I've read it so much about this, I've watched this play out in my own kids as they've re-entered into the States. You know, when Americans and MKs try to connect with each other, there's a little bit of tension, because what an American will almost always ask someone is, hey, where are you from?
Right.
And that's the hardest question you ever ask an MK. Where are you from? That can literally shut them down.
Yes.
You know, the ones that are maybe been down the road a little bit, they're okay. But an MK is always going to ask you, hey, where you been?
Yeah.
Because they've been in so many places. They've experienced so many different settings.
Right.
And so that's as they're just starting to get to know each other. But then as the relationship may be deepening and there's a needing to be trust built. Now, when Americans want to build trust, we go out to eat or we go get coffee together.
Right.
For a lot of MKs, and you know, speaking in general, because there's so many different cultures, but in general, for most of the world, and this is where the MKs are coming from, they don't want to go out. They want to go to a house.
Exactly.
They want to spend time in the house, and they want to then begin sharing stories in that house.
Yes.
That's where depth is felt.
Yeah.
It's not felt at the Cheesecake Factory.
Right.
You know? Oh, there's other good things at the Cheesecake Factory. But,
yes, there are.
but there isn't necessarily that depth that's going to happen. And, and I just happened to ask some MKs recently. I said, what's that like? And they all of a sudden, they dawned on, they didn't even know what the tension in their life was. And they all of a sudden said, that's right. I don't like going out because I don't feel like I know them. I'm not in their house.
Yeah.
I don't know what their house smells like. I don't know these things. And the interesting individual things that happen in someone's house that this plays out. An MK wants to be in that life.
Right.
Not visiting it from the outside.
So you're saying that you know, MKs are longing for other people to be transparent with them with all aspects of their life.
Right.
And by inviting somebody into your home, you're basically opening up your life at a lot of vulnerable levels to invite this person in, and that feeds the MK.
Because they don't feel they know the other person until they've actually had that time.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily offensive to say, let's go to Starbucks.
Right.
But it's saying we're not at that level yet.
Yes.
Is what it's saying.
Yes.
And this is sort of one of those things that, you know, intrinsic and extrinsic values of culture.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those things that the MKs may not even know consciously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, I was asking someone about this, and it clicked with them.
Yes.
You know, these sort of things. So let me go on to and speak about this, why it's so important to debrief these young ministers and these future kingdom leaders as we go through this. The first is just the obvious one that trumps everything else. If it's only this first one, it's a win. And that's Jesus valued children and he valued families.
Yes.
And so that should be enough, obviously, just right there. But, you know, these are familiar verses to all of us, but starting at Mark 9:36, then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one of these little ones, or little children, in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me.
Yes.
And then, you know, just a few verses later, in verses 9:42, Jesus gives a warning about our care for children. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea. So Jesus not only cares, he expresses there is vulnerability with children.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly children serving in ministry in very difficult areas, there's vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting any parent would purposely harm a child, but by not debriefing, we may not be doing the best for a child.
Yes.
So we want to do the best for the children. And realizing there's valuable, important things going on with them. So the second thing is, children are highly resilient to things that have happened in their lives on the mission field. And I know your children, my children, almost every MK I've known have had some serious, serious trials. But you know what? That resiliency is not an accident.
Right.
Resiliency doesn't come just because they're kids.
Yeah.
It doesn't even come just because they're daughters and sons of the King. It comes because there's been purposeful ministry into their lives. And so we need to purposely help them. I'll give an example. At graduation, among the missionary group I was part of over in Kenya, we'd always get together, and for the kids, because that's when they're coming back to the States, and we'd all get together and pray over each other's kids. It's just a sweet time of fellowship and such. And one of the families had a very, very rough time. And this family had been driving home when their daughter was about five, and they were carjacked. Guns were in the face. Father was beaten. Violent, blood, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Five-year-old witnessed the whole thing.
Yeah.
She went and had a very good debriefing. And it's now a joke. It's sick that this is a joke in the missionary community now. But, they begin to ask her, so how do you feel these days? She says, I'm going to get a dog. Like, because of this incident, her parents said, we're going to bless our kids. We're going to get them a pet.
Yeah.
And probably gave them a sense of security, too, by the way.
Yeah.
But, I imagine a couple of weeks before,
This
kid was witnessing horrible things.
Right.
Living through her whole life was turned upside down. Things were stolen from her. Her father was beaten. And now she's like, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
She's back to being a kid.
Yeah.
Because they're so resilient and had proper debriefing of this incident that they could do that. And so they need to process the grief, the loss, the fears, the discomfort that's brought by all the transition in the missionary kid's life and all the things that happen on the mission field.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy. It's good.
Yes. It's
now,
great.
Now, the third, and really, to me, of course, because Jesus said it's enough for me, but then there's this other thing, and it's related to what Jesus said. It's the task.
Yeah.
Okay. We're coming in on the end, right?
Yeah.
The last, think about this, the last translation, the last, people group that needs a Bible, that day's coming. We're ways off. I think, if I remember correctly, we're over 4,000 languages left that need a Bible, but that's a lot less than it used to be.
Yes.
And so that gap is slowing down. We need more people. The labors are still few. But when we think of these missionary kids that had a lifetime of impactful and fruitful service on the field, they've been on the front lines, who better than them to then redeploy back out and be a second or third generation out
right.
of the field?
Yeah.
That I think we need to do that because I believe the MKs will be instrumental.
Yes.
If not our kids, our grandchildren may be the ones that, we've begun to last.
Yeah.
And so imagine what that's like. So I believe that seeing well-adjusted MK's return is highly important to finish the task as well.
Yes.
So, there's a great diversity in the way debriefing is done with children because every child's going to be different.
Right.
It all matters the building relationships, but getting those children to share their stories.
Yeah.
There's funny parts that are going to happen when you have a 7 and a 10-year-old and they're sharing the things that happened.
Yeah.
And one says, oh, no, that's not the way it happened. It happened on this day and mom wasn't there. And the other says, no, mom was there. There's going to be all those funny things as the stories are being told.
Yeah.
But it's really important to go through these exercises.
Yeah.
And often it's done with simple games and simple exercises to help them do this.
Right.
Separate them from the parents to be able to share that. Let the parents stay in the other room. Decide what's important to share with the parents, what's important not to.
Right.
There's all this technical stuff we can talk about. What I want to share today is the importance of having a debrief for the kids and that there would be a good training to do that. This is the time I would say is as good as a debriefing can be done for adults by those that just have pastoral gifts. I would say a level of training probably needs to happen to work with kids. At least sort of someone that's involved with kids ministry and have that sort of background. And then when it comes to the teenagers, I would actually suggest, I hate to say this for the missionaries, break out the checkbook and get involved with somebody that's really a pro at this.
Yes. Yeah.
I think of Missions Training International in Colorado. I think of Train International there in Missouri.
Yes.
Both of them offer excellent services because teenagers are so delicate and it's such a critical junction in their life.
Yes.
Especially, that 13, 14-year-old stage. But even before they come back to go to university, really important that they would get that sort of specialized care that is applied to the teenagers that are the missionary kids.
Yeah, and I think so kind of, stitching this all together, if you have been listening to this series at all and you grasp the value of debriefing, the idea of debriefing parents or adults is absolutely great, but if those are families you're talking about, families that you know and love, if you don't intentionally plan to help the kids get debriefed too, you're not giving the full blessing to them that they should and that they deserve to have as they come off the field.
Yeah, that's right. Now, one thing that we haven't touched on in this whole series, and it's probably not the best place for it anyway, is when there has been a crisis. I mentioned a crisis that's happened to some friends of ours. That's a different type of debriefing, and that's something, again, I'm going to suggest you find some specialized crisis debriefing.
Yeah, professional crisis debriefing.
And if your church has someone that can handle it, that's great. If not, I really do suggest, again, that you break down and find the funding. The Lord will provide that and get the professional care you need, because that will not only keep you on the field, which is certainly important, it keeps you right with the Lord and right with your walk with Him.
Yeah, and if you don't know where to find that, you know, you're welcome to contact us at Shepherd Staff, and we can give you some referrals to people that do this, especially professional trauma-trained counselors and debriefers for missionaries.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, any final thoughts?
No, I think we've covered this from a lot of good angles. And, I mean, the takeaway from the whole series is that, hey, brothers and sisters, if you're listening to this and you're not a missionary, you need to seriously pray about encouraging the missionaries you know to get debriefing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a great gift that happens when there has been several maintenance debriefings, because the missionaries tend to look forward to that time every year or every couple years when they tend to be back from the field. And then when it comes time when they finally do a transitional debrief, they come off the field, it's extremely healthy.
Yes.
It's a really good tool. So we encourage that. And again, contact us if you need any help with this.
Sounds great.
All right, so thank you for tuning in to Facilitating the Mission. We appreciate you hearing us out, and we also encourage you to contact us. Let us know how we can serve you, and also what would be good topics for future podcasts. In the meantime, God bless you.